الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله وسلم على نبينا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين. أما بعد، آية 160 of سورة آل عمران. أعوذ بالله السميع العليم من الشيطان الرجيم. إن ينصركم الله فلا غالب لكم وإن يخذلكم فمن ذا الذي ينصركم من بعده وعلى الله فليتوكل المؤمنون. If Allah helps you, none can overcome you. Who is there after him that can help you? I'm sorry. Let me go back here. If Allah helps you, none can overcome you. And if he forsakes you, who is there after him that can help you? And in Allah alone, let believers put their trust. The Shaykh said in commenting on this ayah, أي إن يمددكم الله بنصره ومعونته فلا غالب لكم فلو اجتمع عليكم من في أقطارها وما عندهم من العدد والعدد لأن الله لا مغالب له. This means that if Allah supplies you with His victory and His assistance, then none can defeat you. So even if all of the people on earth conspired and came together with all their weaponry and all their numbers, they came together with the intent to defeat the believers, they will not be able to do so, because no one can compete with Allah. It is not a matter of now the believers' power. It is the power which the believers are receiving from Allah. Allah's aid and assistance. This is the determining factor in this issue. The fact that the believers have Allah's assistance on their side, while the disbelievers have Satan's assistance on their side. And as Allah says in the Quran, that the kaid of shaitan kana da'ifa. The plotting of Satan is ever weak. Weak when compared to the plot of Allah. It may be strong when compared to an individual, where shaitan may have such authority over him, that the devil may have such power and authority over him that he controls his life, he controls every move. So in this sense, the plotting of Satan may seem to be of value. But whenever we compare it to Allah, then as Allah said, then the plotting of the devil is ever weak. It's weak, can't do much. Why? وَقَدْ قَهَرَ الْعِبَادَ وَأَخَذَ بِنَوَاصِيهِمْ. Allah Azza wa Jalla has subdued the slaves and He has them by their forelocks. He has them by their forelocks. They are no control. No control. If Allah wanted to make the oxygen in this room, end, we can't find a way to breathe. We can't do it. If Allah decided that your heart will skip a couple of beats and then you will faint and go to the hospital, no doctor, no nurse, no one on earth, not you, have control over this heartbeat, whether it should remain or should stop. And the same thing can be said about the blink of an eye, or even the mere digestion of food. If Allah will that this food that we eat is not digested, we will be in big trouble. If we didn't have this concept of relieving oneself, then we will be in bigger trouble. Because all this will just compile in the son of Adam and you will explode. So these are all under Allah's control. Everyone on earth is subdued in this fashion. فَلَا تَتَحَرَّكْ دَابَّةً إِلَّا بِإِذْنِ فَلَا تَتَحَرَّكْ دَابَّةٌ إِلَّا بِإِذْنِ. No creature moves except by his permission. وَلَا تَسْكُنْ إِلَّا بِإِذْنِ. Nor does it remain still except by Allah's permission. وَإِنْ يَخْذُلْكُمْ وَيَكِلُكُمْ إِلَىٰ أَنْفُسِكُمْ فَمَنْ الَّذِي يَنْصُرُكُمْ يَنْصُرُكُمْ مِنْ بَعْدِهِ. And if Allah Azza wa Jalla was to disappoint you, as if he were to leave you for yourselves, he will not support you, just make you depend on yourself, who is it then that will give you victory? Who is it that will aid you after Allah? No one. فَلَا بُدَّ أَن تَنْخَذِلُوا وَلَوْ أَعَانَكُمْ جَمِيعُ الْقَرْضِ. If that is the case, it is inevitable that you will be humiliated and you will be disappointed even if all of the creation came for your aid and assistance. وفي ضمن ذلك الأمر الأمر بالاستنصار بالله والاعتماد عليه والبراءة من الحول والقوة. Now, between the lines, there is the command of seeking victory from Allah, relying upon Him, and declaring our independence of our own ability and will. Don't depend on yourself, rather depend on Allah. When you depend on Allah, then the will and the power which Allah gave you will become effective. If you were to act independently on them and abandon the reliance upon Allah, then your will and your power will be of no benefit for you. I mean, and look, in this world you can find millions of examples of this. Someone who's been training to do something all their life, especially in the, you know, athletes, among the athletes and the stunt pullers, those who make, you know, the stuntmen, you see that they train on, you know, jumping over some bikes, you know, a million times. And finally, when they bring the crowd and they bring everyone, and he thinks, "Khalas, I got it under control, I've been doing this all my life," he goes like this, and goes like, "Brr," and it doesn't even go up the ramp. Now what happened, man? Or he jumps and he, you know, flies off the bike 20 feet after the bike and he lands in some, you know, all kinds of things happen. Why? Because this person thought that he got it all going on. But he doesn't control anything. And these are the last people to depend on Allah, obviously. And if they were Christians, then they would only remember God at that moment. "Oh God, please, just over these 20 cars. And afterwards I'll go to church every Sunday. And I will, you know, leave one of my girlfriends. The other three I have to keep. Blah, blah, blah." Anyways, you know how it is in real life. So the bottom line is, depend on yourself. You may not be able to do anything. Depend on Allah, then Allah Azza wa Jal will aid you if Allah sees it fit that this is good for you. Alhamdulillah. إِذَنْ وَلِهَذَا قَالُوا عَلَى اللَّهِ فَلْيَتَوَكَّلِ الْمُؤْمِنُونَ. So upon Allah, let the believers rely. Upon Allah Azza wa Jal. تقدم المعمول تقدم المعمول يؤذن بالحصري. عجيب. Now this is very technical, linguistic, you know, beneficial points here, which may not really be relevant to the English language, but we will try to bring a relation. Maybe in Spanish it is, I don't know. Of course, language is different. Now in the Arabic language, when the object of the sentence is put forth, is precedes the verb and the noun, this indicates exclusivity. Example, I don't know, this in English doesn't really work, but let me just give you the idea, the general idea. If you say, "I'm going to the market," I is the noun, the subject, the pronoun, the subject of the sentence, the one doing the thing. Going, or "I'm going," is present continuous, whatever. I'm the one doing the verb. The object of the sentence is what? To the market. That which the doer of the action is doing the action for who, for what, in what regard? To the market. Now this means, let me just give you, that means that if I say I'm going to the market, it just means that part of my plan is to go to the market. I may go to the mechanic first, I may stop at my relative's house and visit them for a while, I may take care of some business, and part of my schedule is to go to the market. However, if I were to say, "To the market I am going," in Arabic, this means that I am going nowhere except the market. I'm not stopping anywhere. There's nothing that will prevent me or stop me from going to the market directly, because I'm emphasizing where I'm going as opposed to what I'm doing. The emphasis of the sentence is on what, you know, like in the even and the active and the passive voice. You say, "Muhammad built STC, what am I going to say, Muhammad? Say, Rabia built STC in the year 1850. Here, who are we stressing? We're stressing what Muhammad did. If I said STC was Because he's not important in the sentence. What is important is when SDC was built. This is the passage. So it's a matter of emphasizing something. So in the Arabic language, when you say إِيَّاكَ نَعْبُدُ وَإِيَّاكَ نَسْتَعِينَ الْفَاتِحَةَ, you are really, linguistically, you could say نَعْبُدُكَ وَحْدَكَ وَنَسْتَعِينُ بِكَ, we worship you alone and we seek assistance from you. But that's not how it came. It came, it is only you we worship. It is only you we seek assistance from. Why? To indicate exclusivity. Meaning only for Allah, not for anyone else. Capiche? Comprendre? Alaykum salam, hala ba'abdi aziz. Do we understand? Tayyip. So here, it says, وَعَلَى اللَّهِ فَلْيَتَوَكَّلِ الْمُؤْمِنُونَ. It could have said, وَيَتَوَكَّلُ الْمُؤْمِنُونَ عَلَى اللَّهِ, and the believers rely upon Allah. But that's not what Allah said. And upon Allah, let the believers rely. Trying to say what? Don't rely upon anyone but Allah. Because this kind of sentence structure, this formula is that of hasr or exclusivity. Isn't that beautiful? I think it is. If you don't agree, much with mushkila. أي على الله يتوكلوا لا على غيره. Upon Allah rely, not upon anyone else. سورة آل عمران آية 160. لأنه قد علم أنه هو الناصر وحده. Because it has been known that Allah is the only one who gives victory, the only assistant, the only protector, the only provider. فالاعتماد عليه توحيد محصل للمقصود. So relying upon Allah is a form of singling out Allah in that which only Allah can bring about. It brings about the goal and objective which you want. والاعتماد على غيره شرك غير نافع لصاحبه برضا. And relying upon other than Allah is shirk, is polytheism, is a means of ascribing partners to Allah, setting up rivals with Allah, which will not benefit its doer, rather it will harm him. وفي هذه الآية الأمر بالتوكل على الله وحده. In this ayah, we learn there's a command of relying upon Allah alone. وأنه بحسب إيمان العبد يكون توكله. And that according to the person's belief will be his reliance upon Allah. It's proportional. If your iman is 80%, then you will rely upon Allah 80%. If your iman is 20%, then you will rely upon Allah 20%, and so on and so forth. So the stronger one's faith, the stronger your faith in Allah, the stronger you rely upon Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. Now, ayah 161, وَمَا كَانَ لِنَبِيٍ أَن يَغُلْ وَمَن يَغْلُلْ يَأْتِ بِمَا غَلَّ يَوْمَ الْقِيَامَةِ ثُمَّ تُوَفَّى كُلُّ نَفْسٍ مَا كَسَبَتْ وَهُمْ لَا يُظْلَمُونَ. It is not for any prophet to take illegally a part of booty, more booty. The booty is that which the believers acquire from the disbelievers at the time of war. And this is something that is known. Yani when two armies fight, the victorious, the defeating army will take over and will take over the remainings of the defeated army. All their weapons and whatever is left behind, what have you. You know? طيب. And whosoever deceives his companions as regards the booty, he shall bring forth on the day of resurrection that which he took illegally. Then every person shall be paid in full what he has earned, and they shall not be dealt with unjustly. طيب. The Shaykh said, الغلول هو الكتمان من الغنيمة والخيانة في كل مال يتولاه الإنسان وهو محرم إجماعا. Ghulul, by definition, is the concealment of part of the war booty. To take something, for example, the believers and the disbelievers were fighting. Now, and the believers defeated the disbelievers. What happens is, all the belongings of the disbelievers are brought together in a pile. Then these are distributed by the leader upon the soldiers. Ghulul is when someone, let's say he kills another person, he does not wait for this accumulation of booty. Rather, he takes something illegally and he conceals it. This is a major violation and prohibition. Why? Because Islam is not about bloodshed, as opposed to what many people think, and it is not about you trying to gain richness by fighting against others. These two are not noble objectives per se. The purpose behind fighting, if ever necessary, is for the protection of the religion of Allah and for the word of Allah to remain supreme. Everything else is secondary. So if someone's objective from the war is to take and illegally steal from the war booty, that means that there's a deficiency in their intent. Their intent in and of itself is worldly, and Islam is not for worldly fighting. But look at World War I and World War II, and look at all the other wars that we have today between the various countries in the world. What is it over? Right now, North Korea and South Korea, they're hot. And in other places, what are the people fighting over? Land and fulus, money, resources, natural resources. Now, Muslims don't have this kind of lousy, mundane, lowly objective. We're not about land and gaining extra wealth on the expense of killing other people. No. Now, we like to have a peace of mind, and we just want the deen of Allah, the religion of Allah, to be available for everyone. That's it. Anything which conflicts with that is un-Islamic. Is that clear? So, this is ghulul. And the Shaykh added another definition. It is treachery, or acting treacherously in every wealth which you have been given responsibility over. Yani, your boss, before he goes on vacation, he says, "Yeah, small mudir, these are 5,000 riyals. Keep them with you as spending money. In case one of the workers needed something, you needed to buy lunch for the shabab, you know, something. Keep this 5,000 riyals with you," and he's entrusting you with this money. Huh? So, for 1 month he's going to be gone. The days go by, and you don't spend. There was no need for that money. Everything, the business is running as usual, everything is smooth and dandy. No problem, no need. So what does the shaitan tell you? Say, listen man, he gave you this 5,000 riyals to spend. And you've managed this business so well that you really didn't need to spend any of it. You deserve 2,000 riyals. You deserve it. And if he asks you, say, "I used 2,000 riyals, generally speaking, of the money to maintain the business." And in this case, you may maintain your pocket. This is ghulul. Because you treacherously acquired some wealth which Allah made available for you. You can call him, say, "Listen man, I managed the business so well that I believe I deserve 2,000 of the 5,000. If he says, "Sure, this is halal, this is lawful money for you, enjoy it." But to play games, some people come up with receipts. Huh? He calls, "Man, listen man, make me a receipt for 1,000 riyals, you know, put sandwiches, juice, whatever." "Man, what is that?" And the guy writes the receipt, khalas. He never bought anything from him. Now many people act in this way, and they think that they're actually gaining money. They're gaining getting Allah's anger. And this money would be of no benefit for them. Not in this world, not in the life to come. Not in this world, not in the life to come. Earn your wealth lawfully. Don't cheat. Cheating is not allowed in Islam. Ghulul is cheating. It's treacherously acquiring money that is not lawful for you. Bal hu, and it is haram. It is prohibited according to the consensus of the scholars. The unanimous agreement of the scholars, with no exception, that ghulul, acquiring money in this unlawful fashion, is prohibited in Islam. بل هو من الكبائر كما تدل عليه هذه الآية الكريمة وغيرها من النصوص. Rather, it is among the grave major sins, as this ayah indicates and other textual evidences. فأخبر الله تعالى أنه ما ينبغي ولا يليق بنبي أن يغل لأن الغلول كما عرف من أعظم الذنوب وشر العيوب. So Allah said that it is not befitting that a prophet of his will ever acquire this kind of wealth unlawfully, because it has become known to you that it's among the most major of sins and the most evil of characters, and the prophets are free from that. The prophets are free from that. وَقَدْ صَارَ اللَّهُ تَعَالَى أَنْبِيَاءَهُ عَنْ كُلِّ مَا يُدَنِّسُهُمْ وَيَقْضَحُ فِيهِمْ. And Allah Azza wa Jal has protected His prophets against everything which disgraces them and undermines them. And I wish we can reflect upon this concept specifically in our da'wah to the Christians. You see, in the Bible, this is very unfortunate, in the Bible, the prophets are portrayed as the most abhorrent, wild, outlandish people. And I could give you references from my phone, but time doesn't allow. About Noah getting drunk and lying down naked on the floor, and then when his son came in and he laughed at him, he made dua against him, and they say, according to the Bible, all the black people came from that son which Noah cursed. This is why the white people are superior to the black, because the white son didn't make fun of his father, but the black one did. So he made dua against him, he supplicated against him, and so the black people were cursed until the day of judgment. Isn't that crazy? That's Noah, drunk on the floor. David, according to the Bible, was upstairs on the roof of one of his castles or fortresses, and he seen a beautiful woman showering, and he became sexually attracted to her. He inquired about her. It was said to him that her husband is one of your soldiers on that particular army expedition. So he sent someone to that army to make that guy go to the front of the army so he may be killed. And when he killed, he went and had relations with that person's wife. I believe it was Joshua in the Bible. He was walking down the street and he seen what they call a harlot, a prostitute. So he had to go shout, "What should you charge?" She said, "Well, give me a sheep or a goat and your staff as a down payment, and then he will pay her later." He had sex with her, and she became pregnant, and it turned out to be his daughter-in-law. And according to them, these are the forefathers of Jesus Christ. The forefathers of Jesus Christ came from an illegal sexual relation between Joshua and a prostitute who turned out to be his own daughter-in-law, yani his son's wife. And I can enumerate for you, Prophet Lut, Lot. Supposedly, his two daughters had a discussion, said, "We are the only women left, because all the other people were faggots." They were all gay. So said, there's no other woman left, so let us sleep with our father, so we become pregnant, and then, we'll have children from our father. And indeed, the older one went and got drunk, got her father drunk, she slept with him, and she became pregnant, and then she told her, "Yesterday I got my father drunk, and I had sex with him, and I'm pregnant. You go and do this same thing. And the next day the younger sister did the same thing, and both of them were impregnated by their own father. These are the prophets according to the Bible. And we say this is unacceptable. We reject this naked truth. We reject this in every aspect, in every, you know, it's unbelievable for us that the prophets whom Allah chose and favored over the rest of the people to be examples to be followed will be acting in this fashion. If this is the prophets, what did they leave for the common people? If the prophets are so wild and so sexually driven, then what did they leave for the regular Tom, Dick and Harry? So you read the Quran, you won't find none of this stuff. None of this stuff. And this is truth. So you tell the Christian, look, be genuine. Do you truly believe the prophets of God acted in this fashion? Do you truly believe these are the people God chose and favored and gave them special virtues over the rest of people, sleeping with their daughters, sleeping with their prostitution? And there are many others which I cannot recall right now. And all these are in the Bible. Don't believe me. Just go to Google, put prophets, sex in the Bible. And you will get a list. Ahmed Dilat will find it in a book called Combat Kit. Combat Kit. And he has a chapter about sex. Read. Read. And you'll be shocked. And if you don't believe, go get the Bible, open it up, and read these stories about the prophets. So now look at what Allah is saying here. That Allah favored and made these prophets so honorable that the very idea of one of them stealing something from a war booty, which will eventually be his, he will be the one distributing, but for him to take something ahead of time is something that the prophets are above. They are beyond this kind of conduct and this kind of behavior. Allah honored them. See the difference? So if you really want to learn about the prophets of God, then you have to read the Quran, the only preserved revelation of Allah. So you will know how to respect the prophets of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. If you learn it from the Bible, you will lose respect for them. I mean, can you imagine Noah? If Noah, alayhi salatu wasalam, was according to the way they described him, would you blame his people for not believing in him? If he came and told them, leave your idols, and they turned around and said, listen man, you were naked yesterday in your house. You were drunk, naked in your house. And now you come and give me nasiha, you're giving me advice. You're trying to guide me to God, and this is your condition. They will have every reason to reject him. And they will say, you're just a regular man like us. In fact, I would never do what you did. You see? That's why Allah protected them, because if you undermine their character, if you assassinate their character, the message is destroyed, people will not listen to them. You see what I'm saying? So Allah honored the prophets above such lowliness. وَجَعَلَهُمْ أَفْضَلَ الْعَالَمِينَ أَخْلَاقًا وَأَطْهَرَهُمْ نُفُوسًا. Allah made them the best of creation in terms of their character and the most pure, the purest in their souls, the purest in their spirituality. وَأَسْكَاهُمْ وَأَطْيَبَهُمْ وَنَزَّاهُمْ عَنْ كُلِّ وَنَزَّاهُمْ عَنْ كُلِّ عَيْبٍ. And they are the most pure and the most righteous and the free, that they are the most free from every deficiency. وَجَعَلَهُمْ مَحَلَّ رِسَلَتِهُ مَعْدَنْ حِكْمَتِهِ. Allah made them the place which is to which His message is delivered, and the place where His wisdom is delivered to the people. اللَّهُ أَعْلَمُ حَيْثُ يَجْعَلْ رِسَلَتَهُ. Allah knows best where He should place His message. فَمُجَرَّدِ عِلْمِ الْعَبْدِ بِالْوَاحِدِ مِنْهُمْ يَجْزِمُ بِسَلَامَتِهِ مِنْ كُلِّ أَمْرٍ يَقْدَحُ فِيهِمْ. So the very mere knowledge of the slave concerning one of the prophets is automatic means of raising them above any imperfection, above any deficiency in their character, in their morals. وَلَا يَحْتَاجِ إِلَى دَلِيلٍ عَلَى مَا قِيلَ فِيهِ مِنْ عَدَائِهِمْ. And we do not need an evidence concerning anything that the enemy say against them. لِأَنَّ مَعْرِفَتَهُ بِنُبُوَّتِهِ مُسْتَلْزِمُ لِدَفْعِ ذَلِكَ. Once you recognize the prophet, then you automatically understand that he can never do the following or the evil things which are ascribed to them. You don't need someone to say, well, prove to me that Noah didn't do this or David didn't do that. No. Once we say David was a prophet, Noah was a prophet, Abraham was a prophet, khalas. There's no room for discussion. There's no room for someone to say, well, let me prove to you that he was no good. Because it's impossible. Allah chose them and He made them good.
ولذلك أتى بصيغة يمتنع مع وجود الفعل فقال وما كان لنبي أن يغل.
This is why the sentence structure, the terminology used in the sentence is such that it is impossible that such an action will ever be done by them. So Allah says, and it is never for a prophet to do ghulul. It was never for a prophet to do it. You see the usage? It was never for a prophet to do this. Something that they would never do.
أَيَّمْنَنَا ذَلِكَ وَاسْتَحِيلَ عَلَى مَنْ اخْتَارَهُمُ اللَّهِ لِنُبُوَتِهِ.
So this is impossible for those whom Allah has chosen for His prophethood.
ثُمَّ ذَكَرَ الْوَعِيدَ عَلَى مَنْ غَلَّ.
Then Allah threatened those who actually do ghulul. They take illegal wealth unlawfully.
فقال ومن يغلل يأتي بما غل يوم القيامة.
Whoever then does that, he will bring forth what he has taken on the day of resurrection.
أيأتي به حامله على ظهره حيوانا كان أو متاعا أو غير ذلك.
He will come and he will be carrying it on his back, whether it is an animal or some clothing or anything else. Whatever he takes unlawfully, he will come on the day of resurrection carrying it on his back.
ثم توفى كل نفس ما كسبت.
Then every soul will be recompensed according to what it has earned.
الغال وغيره كل يوفى أجره وزره على مقدار كسبه.
The one who did غلول and the one who did otherwise, everyone will be reckoned and recompensed according to what they have done, proportionally.
وهم لا يظلمون. And no one will be wronged, no one will be oppressed.
The one who does a single bad deed, Allah will not multiply it to 2, 3, or 4, nor will Allah make him accountable for more sins that he committed. Allah is the most just. You commit 1,000 sins, then you will meet Allah Azza wa Jal with 1,000 sins. But if you do good deed, is it multiplied? Yes. You do one good deed, it's multiplied automatically by 10, up to 700, up to many more according to what Allah wills. So the very act of good deed is automatically multiplied, whereas the sin is not multiplied. This is the mercy and the justice of Allah. Justice, that He doesn't multiply your evil deed. Mercy and bounty, that He multiplies your good deed.
لا يزداد في سيئاتهم ولا يهضمون شيئا من حسناتهم.
لا يزداد في سيئاتهم. None of the evil deeds will be multiplied, and none of their good deeds will be missed or will be lost. And the last paragraph, عليكم السلام.
وتأمل حسن هذا الاحتراز في هذه الآية الكريمة لما ذكر عقوبة الغال وأنه يأتي يوم القيامة بما غله. ولما أراد يذكر توفيته وجزاه وكان اقتصاره على الغال يوهم بالمفهوم أن غيره من أنواع العاملين قد لا يوفون أتى بلفظ عام جامع له ولغيره.
Now the Sheikh said, look at this excellent choice of words in this noble ayah. When Allah Azza wa Jal wanted to mention the punishment of the one who does ghulul on the day of resurrection, and He wanted to mention that that it is not only the one who does ghulul, but anyone who comes to sin, Allah used general terminology to encompass the one who does ghulul and any other deed, that all of them will be brought to account, no one will be oppressed before Allah. Not only the one who does ghulul, but anyone else. And this is from the excellent choice of words in the noble Quran. And inshallah ta'ala, next week we will be addressing ayat 162 and 163. وآخر دعوانا الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله وسلم على محمد. أيها المصطفى.
I was just going to add to the point that you were saying, you know, that it gets multiplied. Like, even if you think of doing, you have intention of doing a good deed, you get the hasanah reward. But if you have intention of a bad deed and you don't do it, you don't get the sayyi'ah.
Correct. And you don't do it if you have an intention of doing a bad deed, and you don't do it because you chose not to do it. Because some people intend to do a bad deed, but it doesn't happen. It doesn't work out. That person is sinful. But if you wanted to do a bad deed, then you remembered Allah said, I'm not going to do it. Then you get a good deed. Clear?